Valley. The way that nature intended it. Don't pass it.
Everybody, this is Andy Lopez, better known around the world and locally as the Invisible Gardener. This song is called a thank you song. One of the many things I've been doing is writing music. This song is about 2 hours long. No, it's 15, 20 minutes long. So it says relax, enjoy the next. No, I could do that to you. I actually do two versions of everything once, usually the 3, 4, or 5 minute version. And then the rest of the other version, of course, is 15 minutes long, something like that. It's made for meditation, okay? You don't meditate for 3 minutes. It's also a workout music, so. Step up, step down. Step up, step down. Turn the right, to the left. To the right, to the left. Then I got all kinds of tones in here. Basically, it tunes up to like a body, whole body tune-up. So I'll put this in the background. How's that? Okay, so today we have a guest. Yeah, you're going to find out that we have a lot of guests coming up. I think I'm going to have a guest almost on every show except for one of those days, which I'm probably going to be doing my music or something else. So today's guest is Mike Garcia. I'm going to ask him if he knows has anything to do with Jerry Garcia. Maybe he does. You never know. Anyway, he's a sustainable landscape contractor. So that's one of the first I've heard of a sustainable landscape contractor, so that's good, because I talk a lot about sustainability, but usually in gardening, right? So a sustainable landscape contractor. He's founder of the Enviroscape LA, Los Angeles, California. So he's going to be coming on, if he's not here already, and we're going to be talking to him about what he's doing. And he has some really interesting questions he wants. But I usually, when I have a guest, what I do is I tell them, hey, Mr. Engineer, if the background music is too loud, let me know. It's just wave or something. Otherwise, I'm going to assume. I don't have a great board here. Normally, I would be able to tell what you're listening, what's going on. But I'm playing it by ear. And this is the background music. Should be in the background, not totally overrunning me and all that stuff. Anyway, yeah, some interesting questions. Usually when I have a guest, I tell them, listen, give me 10 questions you want me to ask you. I'll usually try to stick to those things, but sometimes, it doesn't happen. But there are some really good questions. That way, you can really, because when I'm on as a guest, I give them, here's 10 questions I'd like you to ask me, rather than out of the blue talk about whatever, I could do that. But this way we have a good concentration of the information going out. So he has really 10 really good questions. Andy is with us, tuning in. I have a really cool, part of my Mac is plugged into the back of my brain. So I have, the following week, I'm going to be giving a talk. And I'm going to be giving a talk in Manhattan Beach at Mike's place here. They have I think it's a sustainable club. I'm not sure. Hey, Mike, you there? Hey, Mike.
Yes.
I can hardly hear you. Yeah, you're coming and going. Hello?
Oh, hello?
Hi. Hi.
Hey. You can hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Maybe you're, I should try to put my talk a little bit, see if maybe my headphones are a little low. Say something.
Hello? Testing.
Oh,
testing.
Much nicer. Yeah, I had my headphones on really low. I have a cat here, two cats. One cat's 25, and she knows how to work the computer. She knows how to change the detergent channels on the cable thing. So she's involved in everything. So I had the feeling she turned down the headphone. I'm going to be. So what's the name of your group?
Which one?
The one I'm going to next week.
Oh, okay. It's called the Beach Cities Garden Group on Meetup.
I thought it was a sustainable group meeting.
Well, it is. It's about sustainability. Everything sustainability.
Cool. And I'm looking at your. By the way, you don't have anything to do with Jerry Garcia, do you?
Oh, you know what? We're distant cousins through Noah.
Oh, and do you play anything?
No.
Uh-huh.
I wish. Yeah.
Yeah, well.
I just play with plants.
No, I just finished listening or watching about a five-part video or movie, whatever you call it. I'm the Grateful Dead, you know. I'm a deadhead myself because the music was always fantastic to me. I never really went to the gathering or anything, but I love music that just gets you high and so on. So listen, tell me a little bit about what is a sustainable landscape contractor? Because, you know, I talk about sustainability almost all my life, but I always applied it to a farmer or a garden. And a sustainable landscape contractor is one of the most obvious next step, right? It's, you know, how you deal with your property and so forth, right?
Absolutely, because, you know, you may work at a farm, you may do that as a job 8 hours a day as a farmer, but with, you know, we have most people, if you don't live in an apartment building, most people actually live in a house and it's got a yard. And so I think the most sustainable way of farming is farming your own front and backyards.
When I was in the, I was in the ninth grade, I decided I wanted to do edible landscaping. Okay, so I had a hard time.
Boy, you were ahead of your time. Wow.
That was 19, let's see, I got a service in 70, went to service in 68. So it's probably maybe in late 65. So let's see, it's 3 years for high school. So I got out, so that's, so in 68, so it's 65. And I had a hard time, you know, doing that because they wanted me to do phys ed. I said, no, I want to do a garden. I said, what more physical can it be than doing a garden? So finally I ended up doing home ed, which then I got my, you know, my credit for it. But in home ed, I decided I wanted to do not just a raised bed, but I said, why can't I plant tomatoes and stuff all around the school, right? I didn't. Mm-hmm. I wasn't calling it edible then. I was just saying, this plant stuff we can eat, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it kind of backfired because you don't want to grow tomato plants in a school, in a high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. They were throwing tomatoes everywhere. It was a mess.
Yeah.
So one of your questions I was telling the folks here is that you have, I usually tell my guests, just like when I'm a guest, I give them 10 questions. Say, here's 10 questions you can talk about. So I asked you 10 questions. The first one is, what's sustainability? So please tell me, right? What mm-hmm. what is sustainability in your definition?
Okay, you can go on Wikipedia and they give this real scientific answer, but you walk away and you forget, you know, 98% of what's on there because it's a lot of scientific terms. So I think that sustainability for the everyday person, like you and me, is living today without borrowing from tomorrow.
Huh, that's a very simplistic term. Living today without borrowing for tomorrow. Because, you know, that's pretty much what the farmers do when they go destroy stuff in the soil, right? They're supposed to be there for a long time. So you get rid of it, it ain't going to be there tomorrow. And that whole, like your skin, you know, if you destroy your skin, you're not going to have any tomorrows either. You die, right?
That's absolutely right. And so that's, as a society, we were sold a bill of goods after World War II that, in fact, the U.S. was on a pretty much of a high after World War II. We just defeated, the Allies defeated the Axis powers and, you know, it was like an amazing feat, and everybody is feeling good about it. It America helped defeat evil in the world. And the problem was that all these bomb factories, they used nitrogen as part of the bomb process. And all of a sudden, when World War II ended, it's like, what are we going to do? Why we made such a killing during the war? What are we going to do with all this excess nitrogen? And, you know, being the marketers that they are, they figured out that, hey, you know what? This stuff can be used for plants. And so they sold that's where really the beginnings of the synthetic fertilizer market began.
Do you know how they got that idea of this nitrogen this stuff can be used as a fertilizer? One of the developers was using it as a fertilizer. Yeah, he was already feeding his vegetables and his crops. He had a great lawn. Everybody said, how come you have a great lawn here? He kept saying, I'm using ammo because, you know, it is part of it. And if you learn how to dilute it and use it, it is a fertilizer. And that's how I got started. I understand that process. And unfortunately, we kept going down this road, didn't we?
Yeah. And it's what, you know, back after World War II, I think things were a lot more holistic. And then with the advent of, you know, the synthetic fertilizers, which are petroleum-based, by the way, for the most part. And with the advent of, you know, chemicals, hey, we you know, agriculture told modern man that back then that, you know what, you don't have to go back to your farms. Modern technology will take care of it. And, you know, you go and you know, you build TVs and, you know, you build automobiles. We'll take care of the food. Trust us. Just trust us.
I love that.
And we did. We trusted them. And look what happened. It got us into the debacle that we're in today. And how do you feed millions, billions of people without chemicals and without chemical fertilizers and chemical herbicides and pesticides? That's why I think that there needs to be, you know, we need to start somewhere. And so, you know, everything begins at home. And that's part of the reason why I think that I'm not saying you can grow everything for your use, but I'm saying, you know, we have to.
You don't grow toilet paper, I bet you. I bet you don't grow toilet paper.
Well, you know, back in the
18th, no, so you don't grow everything.
don't grow everything. Yeah.
Okay.
Although I started growing this this now legal herb, but people are really fascinated with it on my Facebook page. So, I my first experience with that I had never grown any illegal herbs in my life, and then about a year ago, I had run back in the 80s and 90s. I'd run about 50. Marathons, like the 26.2 mile runs, and you know, as you get older, it kind of catches up with you. So my leg was aching for about 6 months, and I just am adverse to taking chemical painkillers and stuff. So I was trying to bear through it. I'd come home after work and ice my knee, and then a friend of mine said, "Hey, why don't you try this the salve? I bet it'll help." So I got, I didn't know what it was. He said, I said, what is it? He said, CBD oil. So a lotion, I put it on, and within a split second, bam, my pain was gone. I'm like, oh my God. I said, what kind of chemicals in here? He said, well, it's cannabis. I said, what? I said, then all of a sudden I had fear for my friend, thinking if the pharmaceutical companies found out about this. And then I kind of followed the elections and how, you know, cannabis
by the way,
was still in California. Yeah.
The reason why we're talking about this is because I'm actually giving a talk. Mike here just talked me into it. I thought I was going to have a regular talk, but it turns out I'm giving a talk on growing legal cannabis.
Yeah. Legally.
Next week.
What people don't understand is that, you know, there's a lot of questions I'm getting from people. And the first thing they ask is the thing that I asked is, you know, is this going to get you high? And you just need to learn. You need to do a little bit of research on what is hemp, what is cannabis, what is going to get you high, what's not going to get you high. If you spend about an hour, you'll know everything.
Did you ever read the book The Emperor Wears No Clothing?
I've heard of it.
Well, you should pick it up. It's a great book. It's a history of cannabis, history of hemp, and why we are where we're at now in terms of why it became illegal. Do you know why it became why hemp and marijuana became legal? Illegal?
Yeah, I believe it was 1937 or 38.
Yeah. And
the pharmaceutical companies were coming out, and they realized they could not patent a plant. You can't patent oxygen. You can't patent water.
It's the same thing with the paper industry and the clothing industry, because hemp can be used for a variety of things, from paper to clothing. You know, rope. Did you know that the Boston Tea Party wasn't really about tea? It was really about hemp.
Hemp.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that.
What England wanted the Americas to do was to grow its hemp, because England, for the ships and the sails and everything, was major hemp bill. Okay. So that's why they wanted us to do over here, is to grow hemp, because there's a natural, this is the North America is a natural source for native hemp. It's called Americana. I think it's Indica's Americana. And they grow here wild. It looks just like pot, but it's really hemp. And so we protested by dumping our hemp overboard, not the tea. Just saying.
Interesting.
I'm just saying.
Wow. Yeah. Well, wasn't the Constitution written on hemp?
Exactly right. I could go into the whole thing. As a matter of fact, I have a friend who's talking about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. And the whole thing that happened was, you might find this interesting, so would everybody, is that, Ben Franklin was in the paper, right? Printing, right?
Uh-huh.
So he grew hemp for printing. He started growing hemp for printing, right? Jefferson, on the other hand, was trying to, his slaves were growing hemp for their own clothing and doing stuff like that. But Jefferson was trying to, he was smoking it. He got introduced to it in his travels around the world, and he brought some back. And then he saw that the natives, his guys, were growing, so he figured, I'll smoke that. And the guy said, "Boss, you can't smoke this. This ain't gonna do nothing to you, boss." And so that's when they had this discussion, saying they would, Ben, it's like, so what happened? Ben tried it. He said, "This is awful. You can't do anything with this stuff." And their pipe, they wanted to smoke, but they were smokers because they traveled around the world and they brought some things back. So their slaves said, "Here, try these seeds." And the seeds are from Africa, which he started growing. And then his biggest problem was, and they say, "Well, they didn't call him boss. I'm just throwing that in there." They say, "Boss, you can't grow them right next to each other. You can't grow this." They weren't calling it hemp in those days. I don't know what they were calling it. "You can't grow this here and this here, boss. You can't do it. This has got to be over there. This has got to be." And that's true. That's what's going on. And so eventually Thomas Jefferson sent it to Ben. "You guys check this out." And he learned the same thing. As a matter of fact, maybe 5 years ago, they were at Thomas Jefferson's Montebello, his estate. And they found buried in basement, his stash, so to speak. And he had these seeds, original seeds, and they magically disappeared. But they were still viable.
Really?
So I saw that in. Yeah. So you can keep seeds forever, pretty much. Like I said, I'm open to talking about this because I have been into it since the 19, my parents, my great grandparents, they used to send me to Cuba, right?
Uh-huh.
And then either Cuba or Puerto Rico, but usually I would go to Cuba. I think I've been to Cuba more than Puerto Rico. So every summertime, because I'm New York City boy, so my dad's Cuban, my mother's Puerto Rican, and I'm American. So the Cuban gang would want me on the Cuban gang. The Puerto Rican would want me on the Puerto Rican gang. Of course, the Americans would want me on the American gang. So I end up fighting all of them, right? Seriously, couldn't go home. They all gang up. "Hey, chico, ¿por qué no está?" "Hey, you, what?" So my mother said, "You got to get out of here." So she would send me to Puerto Rico or Cuba. But Cuba, I remember the most going there also. Anyway, in Cuba, I got to meet Castro. And the reason why I met Castro is because my great-grandparents ran a grocery store, and they grew everything. And they grew pot. They grew these massive plants. In Cuba, it's against the law to smoke it, but it's not against the law to drink it and use it.
Interesting.
Castor
what do you
oil.
Mean,
castor.
What do you mean drink? What do you mean drink it?
Oh yeah, you drink it. You drink it. That's what.
Do they ferment it?
There are lots of different ways to make it. I've been helping people grow. I have a book, How to Grow Your Own Medicine. I actually have another radio show called How to Grow Your Own Medicine. I wanted to call it How to Grow Your Own Pot, but they say, no, it's illegal. No, you know, so I'm just How to Grow Your Own Medicine. But one of the things in Cuba that I remember, and even just recently, just last year, there's a place in Malibu, four old ladies live there, okay, the gardeners and everything. But they have a giant marijuana plant in the front because it's medical, right? The thing is about 10 foot tall. The gardeners have no idea what it is because the ladies come and say, can you help me with this plant? Something's eating it. And she says, it's a funny tomato plant. Says, ladies, I know what a funny tomato plant is. This ain't no funny tomato plant, right? And so somebody was eating it. And it's interesting, it's the same principles follow that you're going to do for your healthy garden or for your sustainable landscape. You want to have healthy soil. You want to have something that can grow in that'll be healthy, because if the healthier the soil is, the healthier your plant's going to be. Well, believe it or not, not too many things that will attack pot, but there are a lot of things that would eat it because, you know, you do get pretty stoned from it. Anyway, I helped them out, but what they did was they said, honey, you want to try some of our tea? I said, sure. I drank a cup of tea down, and I'm sitting there for about 2 hours, 3 hours later. Yeah, this is a wonderful day, isn't it? Yeah, the ladies were going, you don't feel any pain, do you, honey? And they were playing music, and it was like, holy cow. And normally, you know, I tell people don't eat and drive. Eating and driving and drinking and driving is the same thing. You can make a tea out of it. There are lots of things you can make with this stuff. I'll give you another example just because, you know, you don't want to get me started on this, but guess what guess what I studied in University of Florida in 1970, what my major was. My idea was to do marijuana beer.
Marijuana beer?
Yeah, so not like you do it now where you have beer and then you have the pot and you make like an infusion of pot in the liquid, you pour, mix it in with the beer, and that's what you call marijuana beer, right?
Right.
That's not what No. See, I'm a genius, and I really am in a lot of different ways. So my idea was to have a plant that grows. Okay, so what I do is I was gonna hybrid hops and marijuana together. Okay?
Hops and marijuana. Wow, what an idea.
So, have you ever seen the seeds of the hop seeds? Hops plant?
What?
They look identical to marijuana seeds. You couldn't tell them apart by looking at them. Try it sometime.
Really?
Yeah, look at some hop seeds, get it, and get some marijuana seed. Look at it and go, holy cow. You mix them up, you will not be able to tell them apart. So my first idea was, okay, I'm going to cut one in half, the other one in half, put them together. That was a bad idea because I just killed them both, right? I figured maybe they might, you know, fuse together, right? So I said, no, that was no good, but I had to try it. So then my idea was to take to grow. This was University of Florida, and I went to the professor and said, this is what I want to do, okay? And the guy says, well, it's probably illegal. Let's talk to the FBI. And the FBI says, well, we'll have to monitor it. If it's a new plant, I basically created a new species of plant because it's not legal. It's not in the paper. Nobody knows what it is. So they were monitoring for the TH level of the plant. So basically what I did was the first year I took – my idea was to take, okay, I'll grow a marijuana plant, and I had to decide what variety, so I chose a certain type of indica because of its hardy root structure. And then I grew. Then I had to decide what type of hops plant I would grow. So again, I did the same thing, a very rigorous vine. You know, hops is a vine, right?
Right.
Okay, so my first thing I did was I took the marijuana, top of the marijuana, and grafted it to the bottom, to the root systems of the hops. That doesn't work. What really works is you take the vine and graft it to the bottom of the marijuana. So what you have is a vine, but the root systems are the pot plant, right?
Mm-hmm.
See? So what happens is that eventually, because hops is not a perennial, it doesn't grow year after year, it dies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I had to do, the plant will grow. This was in Gainesville, Florida. So the plant will do like 20 feet. It'll look really good. The first year, it had the typical hops things hanging down on the hops vine. Then it'd die off. So I said, fine, I'll cut the top, regraft another marijuana onto it. So what happens is every year we tested, and every year had more and more THC in it. Eventually, the following year, what happened was is that that vine, because, you know, we don't cut the whole vine back. It's just like grapes. You know how you prune back certain things, you get new growth from that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's what I did. I grafted onto it. So the new growth was basically this new hops that was grow. And what happens is the leaves of the hops change to the leaves of the marijuana. And instead of the hops growing, come down, because that's what happens. You have this hops buds. It was marijuana buds that was coming down. And people would come, their professor would come and look at it. People would be looking at it, right, going, it looks familiar, but I'm not sure what it is. Not sure. I don't know what that is. And by the fifth year, the FBI said, DEA, they had a meeting, you have now reached THC level is illegal, and you can't do this anymore. That was 1970. I started in 71, 72, 73, 74, something like that, 75. But I can easily start it up again anytime, because it's a really simple, amazing process. And people were making a tea from it. You were drinking it. You would go. And it basically, I studied the whole process. As a scientist, I understand what it is that works in your body, that why the THC. It's not just the THC or the CBD that works. People are selling CBD, right? You go and buy CBD, right? That is not going to do it as much as a combination. There's at least 25 different cannabinoids that it's in pot.
Yeah.
And each one of these things together work, and that's what makes it work. Together, that's what makes it work rather than separately. And if you find the formulation of how much of this and how much of that to grow, that's why they're different varieties. I'll tell you one other thing. I mean, you're the guest, right? sorry. I'll shut up and you talk. Go ahead.
No, this is so bad. In fact, this is a segue into our whole thing next week. I think as a society, we've been so conditioned to stay away from pot. That people have just, been at arm's length away at it or more.
Yeah. I was in a service in 1968, 1969, 1970, Navy. I have over 10,000 hours in the helicopters. I was a photographer, Navy SEALs. So I was shot, declared dead twice. Twice, not once, twice. I didn't know that the first time you got shot, legally you're no longer in the service. I could have got up, walked away. Hey, everybody, have a nice day. See you later. They didn't tell me that. They didn't say anything, okay? So I was in Vietnam. I got blown up, beep, boom, concussion, the whole thing, laid down dead, all that stuff. But I had major damage to different spine, I forget what you call it, lumbar or whatever in the back, number 7, number 12, who knows what they were, Basically, he said, you blew out a tire, son. Your tire is like blown out there. He's take some of these here pills. And there were little red pills. They were like Darvons, but there was a Darvon inside of another one. It was like white stuff inside. It was another pill. So my friend who was a captain said, look, throw away the white stuff. Just take the red pill. But that stuff, yeah, it worked. But I would be vomiting. Every 5 seconds, I would be vomiting because it makes you so dizzy. And so I couldn't do anything. I could forget about flying. Imagine the guys guiding the plane, and next thing you see is vomit on the inside of the windshield, right? That would be me. So my co-pilot said, here, smoke this. I took one hit of that, not dizzy at all. Everything stopped. Cool, everything's fine. Great. I got court-martialed 14 times in the service for smoking. Finally, by the third time, the doctor says, I'm going to go to court-martial with you, and I'm going to explain to them what happened. And he basically gave me my first medical marijuana thing, because he said, leave the guy alone. You get this stuff, he's vomiting, he's dizzy, he can't do anything. But he takes a couple of hits, and I didn't drink beer. I'm not a beer drinker, right? He says, let him smoke this stuff, and he's fine. You leave him alone. And I'm telling you the truth. Finally, the captain of the ship wanted to know what this whole thing was. Why, Lopez? You're probably the most intelligent, because I also did Armed Forces Radio. I was a DJ at Armed Forces Radio. This is my voice. You're listening to KNDY, home of the good guys. That's my radio show thing.
It wasn't Good Morning Vietnam.
Exactly right. You saw that movie. It's identical. That's exactly what I did. One of the things I did, I was there doing my show on a regular basis. It's called Leroy's Golden Rocks. I played rock and roll, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And he got stoned too. That was 1968. He was giggly, eating stuff. He says, I can drive, I can do things. He says, yeah, it doesn't impair you. And he says, well, I'd rather do this than beer any day, because I never drank beer, you know, I never did any of that stuff. But it's a long story. Yeah, for the drugs, you know, people give you drugs all the time. Doctors, you know, give you drugs. Mm-hmm. And it's this stuff here, if properly grown and properly used, can heal a variety of ailments, including, you know, psychological disorders, eye disorders, all different kinds of other things that, you know, we're trying to deal now with cancer, especially if you're sick, especially if you have cancer or some other things like that, that you need to be able to get your strength back. Wonderful, amazing stuff.
There, you know what, I understand there's research coming out of Israel, Dr. I think it's Michelle, that is doing research on, you know, lab rats and cancer, and they're actually shrinking tumors by injecting cannabis into the tumor.
Exactly right. And so the problem is we're not allowed to legally do research, right? The federal government says you can't do research, which is kind of silly. If you allow people to do research and prove that this stuff is actually beneficial in a lot of different areas, I mean, people are thinking of doing it from this up, but one of the things that I learned to do a long time ago is you can actually make a tea and spray your garden with it. Bugs don't like it as much either, okay?
Really?
It affects the nervous system of all the different creatures. And that's one of the things that I've learned early on in life, lots of different things you could use that you would think are normal, like coffee. Caffeine is toxic to most insects.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. They had that whole line of insecticides, pyrethrins, but they had... But a lot of times they add real bad chemicals to it too, and so it'll have an adverse effect. I talk about insects. I was actually in a beehive. There's a city in the
South. Beehive?
Yeah, I was in a bee. Well, it's close to inside a beehive as you can get. I'll put the YouTube video up today or tomorrow. I did a little thing. There's this local city that used to let a lady keep her beehive. They have 21 beehives. And she would, for free, go to take her, go trap the bees if anybody called. And then she'd take them to this little area. So she had about 21 hives. And so she'd harvest the honey and make a little, she's a single lady, older single lady. And so she'd actually sell the honey. That doesn't make a lot of money, but, you know, it supplements her income a little bit. And there's, I guess, a new director, something like that, moved in. New sheriff moved into town basically and said, you know, get your hives out of here. So I'm trying to connect her with the local nurseries in the area to have her hives there. And I told her I wanted to see if I could go visit. And so she gave me a little bee hat, keeper hat. And it was wonderful. I was amongst thousands and thousands of bees, didn't get stung. I only had the hat on. I had my short sleeve shirt, and bees were, you know, crawling over me. I'm like, man, I
what was the people's problem? The guy didn't want the bees there? Was it causing a problem? Or you would think that
they're not causing a problem. Just that, you know what, they felt that the city is, you know, has risk exposure, liability issues, I guess. But then, hey, you have liability. Every time you get in a car and drive, you've got, you know, liability.
Yeah.
I mean, that's tough. So I think it's just that I really can't think of a reason why they would do that. But the neighboring city over, they're kind of trying to get their sustainability program up and running. And so they're like, sure, we'll welcome them. God, are you kidding? Yeah, we'd love to. And yet,
you know,
the city...
You know, one of the things that would be really cool is just a thought, you know, because for myself, for example, like I have one customer who has an avocado tree. Are you there? Hello? Did we lose him? I think we lost him. Hey, Mr. Engineer, I think we lost Mike. Hello? Am I off too? Maybe I'm off too. Let's see. Getting him back. Am I on? Somebody talk to me. You gotta talk to me. I can't stand the silence. You are on. Oh. Oh, good. That's what happens when you use a cell phone, you know? Right?
Yep. Okay. So anyway, cities will do greenwashing just because greenwashing, or you know, being green is cool. But I'd like to think guys like you and I were green before it was cool. So
listen, the bee thing, one of the things that would be really cool. See, I was saying, I have a customer. She has these avocado trees. They're the original variety. You know, in the early ones, you had an A and you had a B. And it depends on bees to pollinate. And there's no bees in this neighborhood at all. At all, it's hard. You can't find any bees anymore, and it seems like you would want to have a beehive or two in your neighborhood, and that's an indicator that your neighborhood is healthy. If your bees die, then you have a toxic neighborhood. So I would think you should be able to find a home for them, and you know, you would think people would say, "Come here," right, and make a bee park or some place for them, and tell people, "Here, you afraid of bee? Wear this," you know, and teach them that right.
Oh, yeah. You know what? The main message of this whole YouTube video I made was, you know, I could just imagine this big, you know, beautiful little honeybee. And if he could speak, he's saying, if we die, we're taking you with us.
Yeah, yeah. I was talking about the bee colony. I think, what was it? Drop a colony when the colonies die, you know?
Oh, the die-off. Yeah.
Die off, right. And about, I don't know, it seems like 20 years ago when I started yelling about GMO, and I said, guess what? Who's going to start having problems first? And you know, that's why the bees are having major problems now. You cannot pollinate genetically engineered organisms and survive for too long. Okay? Simple as that.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I got more questions for you. What's foodscaping? Is foodscaping where you throw food all over your body?
Yes.
Like bodyscaping?
Tattooscaping. No, it's you know what's interesting is we just landscaped a brand new house in Manhattan Beach, California.
Uh-huh.
They're
uh-huh.
asking about $4 million for it, and the front yard is foodscaping. What I mean by foodscaping is it's got the regular hardscape, the driveway and the walkway up to the front door. But as bushes, we use like blueberries for one side of the yard, and then we used we actually have planter boxes, raised planter beds. And then we did an avocado tree, a lemon tree, a banana tree.
You came up with that name, didn't you?
Oh, I don't know. I don't. It just kind of gradually came on me.
Because I was using edible landscaping myself, you know, because that makes sense. But foodscaping now, that's a clever way to actually describe what it is that you're doing. And, you know, you can actually grow, your lawn can actually be an edible lawn too, you know.
Yeah. You know, well, you know, we found a lawn substitute because people have to have their lawns. If you have kids or dogs, they just insist on having lawns. So we found this new ground cover. It's called Carapia with a K, Carapia.
Can you eat that?
You can't. Well, you know what? The bees love it.
Because it's got white flowers six months out of the year.
Yep. And it's. And you only water it twice a month, and you don't have to mow it because it stays low. It's wonderful.
You get it from Robert?
I get it from Robert. Yep, and he's Robert Choquist. He's a great guy. And if you're too far out for me to go, I just say, hey, you know what? Have your gardener prep the soil, and he could lay it. Here's Robert's number. Give him a call. Yep.
Yeah, I've been promoting his stuff for quite a few years now. That stuff goes down 10 foot deep. It comes as sod, so you can lay the sod down, or you can cut up the sod in little pieces, and it will spread out. We did a whole sod that way. Lady said, I don't want to buy a straight sod. Well, they cut, they took a sod and they cut that up into about 10 pieces and planted them. Initially, you water it well, but once it gets established, it just takes off.
Oh yeah, it's like for a hillside. It's like a tent pin. It'll hold the hillside down. All these
exactly,
fires
right.
we had recently, they need to be planting crapia. That stuff will hold the hillsides down. So
the fire won't get very far. You don't have to use very much water. Did you put subsurface irrigation on that, or did you still do the overhead? Because
you
subsurface would be fine.
People have fallen in love with subsurface drips. So yeah, we're still using it. But if you don't, it's fine too, because you water it so infrequently. You know,
right, once a month.
Then if you have overhead spray. But what I would recommend is the rotator type of sprinklers, not the ones that mist, because you'll lose about 50% water.
75%. 50% is a conservative guess.
I'd be nice to them. and then we like the subsurface drip. We like using is the Rainbird Copper Shield Technology drip irrigation. So they
right.
have a strip of copper every 12 inches, and that copper prevents root intrusion. Otherwise, you'll have to splice a fertigation system in. It's a fertilizer injection system. Pour herbicide in there, and the manufacturer like, yeah. And then it'll push the weed roots out. The problem with that, number one, herbicides. And then
no, you don't have to use herbicides to do that.
No, not if you use the Rainbird Copper Shield Drip.
Right.
Now there's one other one that you don't have to put, herbicide into, and it's one made by Toro. And the reason why you don't have to put herbicide in there is because it has herbicide built into the plastic. It's like a Franken pipe.
Not a good thing if you're going to be a
natural. No. So and plus the Rainbird, their copper shield drip is a recycled plastic, so it just has
right. And they made it especially. I think it's guaranteed for 10 years below ground.
Which
is really nice. And the whole idea that people need to understand about keeping it below ground is that, for starters, it's one of the most efficient ways to utilize water. One lady said, no. Naturally, it rains, so we're going to always have overhead stuff. And I go, but realistically, when you put water below ground, you're going to need 75% less water. And the only time above ground when you need anything is maybe when you do a cleaning. You can spray to clean off the leaves. It gets really dusty, or maybe to do some specific thing. But below ground, the trees as a natural arborist, I'm always advocating subsurface irrigation specifically for the trees, because the trees need different watering than the lawn. And most people don't realize you can do that in the lawn. Instead of having overhead sprinklers, you can do subsurface for a lawn, and it's actually better for the lawn because the root systems go down to the water.
Exactly. Yeah, you build a grid about 12 every 12 inches. Run a line down. Yeah, and that's it. You put the filter, and you can actually buy a kit, a valve with a pressure regulator and the filter
right.
and the reducer.
And the fertigation is good, too, because you don't have to put herbicides. What I do with a fertigation unit, I put compost tea in there. I'll do a broad variety of different bacterial mixtures so I can constantly bring in microbial and life back to the soil. Fertigation is really cool. I use, you ever hear of Nitron A35? Cool. That's an excellent enzyme product. Comes out of Fayetteville, Arkansas. Another product called Iger Grow. Another enzyme product comes from Indianapolis, Indiana, somewhere. And these are enzymes that once you get, the use them in the fertigation unit, it's constantly reactivating the soil. That's why I always tell people use compost, learn how to use rock dust. And, the same principles we're talking about here will go for growing whatever. I got a couple more questions, and we still got
a little bit
of time to go through. What is the difference between aeroponics and aquaponics? I'm asking you so that you can explain it to people, because I already know.
Okay.
That.
You know what? Nervous. In our day and age, most people have heard of hydroponics. And, that's growing plants in water and they have some type of media holding up the plant. Aeroponics is where they have different types, like NFT, nutrient film technique, where you basically squirt the roots with an amount of time. And then
that's what they do in Israel for tomatoes. They go by and they get sprayed.
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful. Technology.
And aquaponics, it would be using a pond?
Yeah, so you're using pond water, which is, liquid compost, basically. And you're putting the pond water on a root system. So I've actually got a vertical garden in my backyard. I'm growing, I think I have some kale in there right now. And I've jimmy-rigged it to put a pump in there so that every 15 minutes it gets doused, the roots get doused with pond water, and it's cool. Doing really well. Yeah.
But I did Florida. Uh-huh. In Florida, I developed a swimming pool without the chlorine. We have fishes in it. And the water circulated through, and I did a way for the water to circulate through the ground and the plants that were growing there and back into the pool. And the plants filtered out everything and grew really well. I didn't have to fertilize them at all because the fishes in there, everything's recycled. It flowed through, and it came back through and clear. You didn't need to use any kind of, I used, I think it was ultraviolet or infrared to further, disinfect it.
Mm-hmm.
That was cool.
That's funny, when you come over next week and you'll see my backyard, actually, I had a natural swimming pool, no chemicals, or I used plants as a filtration. This is about 10 years ago I built it. And I'd say about 5, 6 years ago, I kind of sensed that the drought was going to get bad. So I filled it in with tanks, and then I put a patio on top of it. Now it's a rainwater harvesting system. So when it rains, cool. I capture about 5,000 gallons of rainwater.
Everybody needs to do that, because this one guy in Malibu, he says he has enough for 6 months worth of watering, because he has like a 500,000-gallon tank, giant, massive tank that everything from the roof and everywhere just goes in there. He also has a pool. It's called Epic Pool. So the any water that he uses goes into it. Actually, not a pool. It's a lawn. So think of a pool that has a membrane on it, and that's your lawn grows on.
Wow.
It's called Epic, right? So it's meant to catch the rain from the top, from the roof, and everywhere. It goes right into this ground water there, and then it goes back out again to be reused. There's lots of really cool technology. But the point was, that rain that we had not too long ago, we had all the flooding and everything. You can buy like 20 rain barrels where you attach them together, where one overflows and the next one overflows and the next one. Phew, you have so much water that you... You don't have to what drought, right? Listen,
exactly.
What tell people about GMOs, because I know about GMOs, but I know everything, but I want you to tell me. That's your question.
Well,
what is GMOs?
So basically, GMOs in a nutshell, they're genetically modified organisms, and the reason that they're genetically modified is so they can spray glyphosate. That's commonly known as Roundup. So they spray tons and tons of Roundup on these crops, especially corn, which they get high fructose corn syrup from, which is in about 85-90% of the packaged foods that you buy in supermarkets. So if you look at the label and it says high fructose corn syrup, you're ingesting Roundup. Now, what does Roundup do? If you look at the average man or woman, what you're seeing is 10% Homo sapien and about 90% bacteria, microbes. Just like you talk about microbes in the soil, you're looking at the average human being has 10 times as many microbes.
That's right.
Yeah, and so that Roundup destroys the inner flora inside of us, and if that's not healthy, we'll put it this way. When you ingest food that's genetically modified, that would be the equivalent of spraying your garden with Roundup. And
I do a show called The Body and the Garden. You don't get my podcast, do you, right? Did you ever sign up as a member? I gave you a link.
Oh,
to
I
it
did. Absolutely.
Do you get the podcast?
Contest. Man. Oh, yeah. I'm a happy camper. I won the free
podcast. The podcast, you should look for The Body and the Garden show. I just did one just a few weeks ago with a lady who runs the Biomeme, you know what that is?
No, the bio.
Me, Biomeme. Biomeme.
Biomeme.
No, yeah, right. Heard. And that has to do with the organisms in your stomach.
Okay?
And so we talk about, because I've always said, look, we evolved from the earth. We evolved from the mycelium in the earth. The mycelium is millions and millions of years older than we are. And we evolved from that. And we carry with us these organisms that are in our bodies just like they're in the soil. And the same thing that that Roundup does to the soil destroys the organisms and their microbiological structure. Guess what it does to our bodies? Into our stomach. And if you're now that, you know, scientists say, gee, maybe if you have healthy stomach, because they're calling the stomach your second mind, right? Your second brain, right?
Your second brain, yeah, absolutely.
Right. So that's, so you would love that aspect of it. And we're going to be doing more of that, because I have more. In a couple of weeks, a lady named Carrie Gilliam. She wrote Whitewash, which is all about Roundup.
Oh, I've got the book. Oh my God, she's like a reporter, and she spent years. Yeah.
And you'll blow you away. Well, people away, because I've been telling them this for years. They're lying. They're passing out false information. They're telling you this, and they're really doing something else. They know what's going on, and now they're selling the technology to other companies. So you're gonna have 2-4-Ds, and then they say it's totally safe to eat. Because it isn't going to affect you. And here's an author who has done her job well. And I want to have her on. You should listen, because it's going to be. And you're welcome to call in and talk to her.
Yeah, I've got her book. I would love to do that. I think everybody needs to hear her message. I remember back in the 80s when I was a young landscaper being told by my horticulture professor that, hey, you know what, Roundup, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. It doesn't hurt humans. It just kills, plants. It's translocative. And so it's great for our environment. All the manufacturers sell it. And then gradually you start doing your research. I think the blessing of the internet is that we have a transparency that we didn't have before. And who knows how many people have died I just posted on Facebook the incidence of Roundup as it started increasing, so did the incidence of autism.
And there's lots of correlations you're gonna find, including the bee die off, including all kinds. They were going to do a lawn, a genetically. One of the things I want to explain, I don't really have a lot of time, because I, as a scientist, I try to explain to people exactly what GMO is and how it's broken up into 3 different categories. And then one of my articles is called Some GMOs Are Good and Some GMOs Are Bad. You and I are GMO. We're genetically modified organisms from our parents. We're not identical. Okay, we're not clones. So the real problem in genetically modified organisms is not the genetically modified organism. There's 3 different divisions of the genetically modified organisms. Do you know what that is, what they are offhand?
No.
Okay, I'll tell you. Look, one of them is where you take genes and you expose them to radiation. The mutated gene is what that organism is, which kind of sounds really weird, and it is. Shouldn't even be going down that road, but that's one of the broken the 3 divisions, right? The other division is the one that we're confused about, because that would be normally you take a tomato, you grow that tomato, you go, my God, that's that tomato plant was delicious. I'm going to grow that some more, and you keep doing that. Over the while, you end up with this modified organism that's totally safe, but you lots of different ways you can modify. You can make it sweeter, you can make it grow up, right? But lots of good things that can be done with that. And then there's one more way to do it, and this is the one that's bad, really bad. That what we're being told is good is that genetically engineered organisms. This is where you take anything from a chemical to a gene of another animal, because they want to take a gene of a pig and put it into the corn. Now, Mother Nature's been doing this a long time. She would have done it a long time ago if that was a good thing. I don't think so. But that's what it, and then, of course, you put a chemical in there, and that chemical your body's not going to say, well, it's in the gene, it's not going to bother me. No. It will affect you. There's a disease already named after this. Of people who end up it's like pus. It comes out of your body and it looks very.
Crohn's disease.
It's a name of it. I don't know it offhand, but there's a disease. I had another person. There's a whole bunch of good information out there, and I'm trying to eventually get more people on here, because I work a lot with doctors and farmers. I have a friend who's a doctor who decided he wanted to learn about the human body. So what do you do? He took up farming. And he became one of the world's greatest farmers. Then he took that knowledge back to being a doctor. Now he's one of the world's greatest doctors, okay? Cool. His name's Arden Anderson, okay?
Yeah, right. You know, I had a chance to go to the Plantation Project. If you haven't heard of it, it's great. It's on the, you can go to their Facebook page, the Plantation Project. Plantation Project. And it's a bunch of doctors who acknowledge that medical school doesn't teach you, you know, the first thing about food as medicine. And so when they're watching the things, movies like Forks Over Knives, Cowspiracy, What the Hell, they're looking at these movies and they're like, oh my God, we were never taught that. You know, what they were taught was that, or what they didn't know was when you go to medical school, you have these big pharmaceutical companies who donate millions of dollars every year. And then and then it's like, okay, we donated all these millions. You need to let our reps educate future doctors. And so you get out of medical school, you're basically just a pharmacist. You're just doling out synthetic drugs. And so when they're finding out that food can be medicine, and it should, as it should be, they're like, wow. And so this whole Forks Over Knives genre is kind of organizing doctors and educating them. And so that's what the Nutrition Project is.
You need to send me the link to that. Send me an email to that, because any way that I can connect with doctors who are realizing, hey, we need to pay a little bit of attention. We need to deal with our body and the soil in pretty much the same way. We need to bring everything back to life. We need to stop polluting it and introducing more and more toxins. This whole thing with the flu, you know, I have my own idea of what's going on here. You're gonna have a major infestation of diseases spread around because people's immune systems are totally shot. Totally shot. There's no way that they can defend. And even if you're healthy, if I was a healthy dude and everybody around me was deadly sick, well, I'm going to get sick too. And if it's going to be so bad, it's going to kill even the healthy people. And you're asking for it. But the thing is that I try to express to people is that it's, the key here is healthy soil. If you have healthy living, beautiful soil that has to, because it comes down to trace mineral deficiency. We talk about food heals you. Well, what's in the food that heals you? What we're trying to do is we need trace minerals. We need a variety of trace minerals in our body. And if you don't get that, you're not going to be healthy. Simple as that. It's the same thing with the soil and the plants and the trees. So we're going to go through trace mineral deficiency. And, you know, our stomach is supposed to break these things down for us, right? But if they ain't there, you ain't going to give it to us, right?
Yeah, your stomach's not a trash can, first of all. Your stomach is what keeps you alive. It's not a trash can. And yet, a lot of people in our society think it's a trash can. And they
I like that, right?
There's no backup planet. If you don't take care of the body you have, where else are you going to live? So, you know, we got to get our priorities straight. And that's why we got to connect all the dots. That's why I love about your whole program and your whole brand is that it actually connects all the dots. It actually shows that, you know, there's mind, body, and spirit, but they're all connected. There's no disconnection. And that's what, you know,
Listen, I'm going to get you to write a preface to my book. Can I do that?
Absolutely.
Did I send you a copy already? Did I send you a pre version of it, a PDF version?
No, not yet.
I didn't?
Not yet. No.
I'm actually, as a member, you know, it's up there. Have you been able to log into the website?
I'll have to look for that.
Because you should be getting a newsletter.
Okay.
And the newsletter, you know, did you actually do the one thing and you went up there and did you download the PDF file that says read me, open me first? Did you read that one?
I don't remember.
Okay, we're going to start over again one of the things I do is I assume people have a hard time with websites and stuff. But when you open that Read Me First, it shows you how to get the podcast, how to download, where all the free books. You know there's 22 free books up there for you, right?
Oh, my goodness. I'm working on my first one.
I also have a really beautiful Bricks book. I also have a report recently by Rodale that says, yes, there is a big difference between conventionally grown organic and organically grown produce. Duh. and that's why I want this lady carry on. I actually tried this University of Stanford. They did a study. Said, we studied 400 studies. There are 400 studies. We took those studies. We studied, and we reached the same conclusion they did. There's no difference between chemically grown. I mean, they don't say chemically. They go conventionally grown and organically grown produce. And I tried to get her on my show. And she said, what questions would you ask? I told her, she said, no, you're hostile to me. I'm not going to be on your show. It's 2:00. Are we, engineer, are we done? Oh, 2 minutes left.
Oh, great. So
I think we're done. We need to come back on again and we can talk some more. I love this because you see what happens when I have somebody to talk to? I mean, we're on the same path in a lot of ways. I want to help people to grow the best food, everything, right? There's no reason why they can't do that. You just have to get off this bandwagon of let somebody else do it for us, because you have to do it yourself. You have to learn how to do it yourself, right?
If you grow it yourself, you can touch it, you can feel it. You know what? Yeah. It boils down to this. We were told after World War II that you have, we're going to, big corporate America, right, we're going to take care of your food supply. What we did as a result is we developed a platonic relationship with our food, and right, we need to start a revolution where we need to develop a full-blown love affair with our food.
Yeah, remember Victory Gardens? I always tell people, remember Victory Gardens? Everybody should have their own Victory Garden, in their backyard. Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to being there. Show up a little bit before 2 to give my talk. And, are you going to be smoking there during the talk? Is that part of the thing?
Oh, we'll see.
I'll take some tea. Okay, man. I look forward to seeing you, okay?
Okay, thanks, Eddie. We'll talk to you.
Take care now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, everybody, I'm not sure how much time we have left. I think we have a few minutes. We have a minute left, 30 seconds. He's typing. I love it when he's typing because it's like I'm listening to God. We got a minute. My monitor left me, so I can't even know what I'm doing anymore here. But thank you very much for listening to my show. This is Andy Lopez. Better known as the Invisible Gardener. I'll be here again. Well, I'm not coming next week, okay, because I'm giving a talk. We're going to do a pre-recorded show. So take care now. Bye. Oh, sorry. Thank you for listening to Don't Panic, It's Organic. See you next Saturday.